Thanks for listening to the Best of Herd Podcast. Be sure to catch us live every weekday from 12 to 3 Eastern, 9 to noon Pacific on Fox Sports Radio and FS1. Find your local station for the Herd at foxsportsradio.com or stream us live every day on the iHeartRadio app by searching Herd.
This is the Best of the Herd with Colin Cowherd on Fox Sports Radio.
This is The Herd. Wherever you may be and however you may be listening, we are live in Los Angeles on iHeartRadio, Fox Sports Radio, and FS1. Joy Taylor is joining me on a Tuesday. HBO Hard Knocks debuts tonight with the Raiders and John Gruden.
Can't wait. It may be the greatest ever.
Yeah, a lot of storylines.
It has that potential.
A lot of crazy people, a lot of big stories, big talkers, big ego. John Gruden's a TV star, so we'll all be watching that tonight. It's great to have you in. So, you know, social media can be very punishing. You know, it's the tyranny of the mob. Doesn't matter if you're a Republican or a Democrat. Nobody wants to get beaten up on social media. Your phone's going crazy. And so it's important when you're going into a battle to curry the favor of the public, right? That's why people hire PR firms and PR handlers so you can, you know, get some public sentiment on your side. So Jerry Jones right now and Stephen Jones are in a very public battle with Ezekiel Elliott and his camp and his agents and his attorneys to gain some public sentiment on this holdout. Obviously, Cowboy fans want to see their star player on the field. Obviously, Zeke wants to get paid. But it's interesting to watch the positioning of Jerry Jones and his experience doing this and the inexperience of Ezekiel Elliott. So yesterday, through Jane Slater, she'll be on our show in 15, 20 minutes, the Cowboys released, making it very public again, they released some sourcing through Jane Slater. Quote, we have made generous offers to make our quarterback, running back, wide receivers highest paid top five in their positions. We are prepared to make it a prove it deal for all of them if they unravel and don't come to fruition. So just think of the wording here. Generous, highest paid, prepared. Cowboys are telling you we are prepared. We've done our homework. We're willing to make generous offers. Those are nice words, prepared and generous. You go to somebody's house for Thanksgiving. We prepared a nice meal. There are generous portions. Very good wording by the Cowboys. Oh, and then Ezekiel Elliott, his camp released this through Josina Anderson. He would not play without a new contract, and he told them in January. That's a threat. I will not play. I told you in January. So the Cowboys, generous, highest paid, we are prepared. Ezekiel Elliott, down in Mexico, not with the team, won't play this year, told you in January. Who's winning the PR battle? The Jones family. Remember Stephen Jones? About a week ago, I said, this is so shrewd. This is all about every time Jerry or Stephen talk, what's the common thread? They're being reasonable here with Stephen Jones.
We want to be fair. We want our players to feel good about their contract. But at the same time, we don't want to do things that are out of line because we can't afford to be that way. Whether it's Dak, whether it's Amari, whether it's Zeke, they all understand we've got a whole group of young players coming behind them that want to be Dallas Cowboys and want to stay here. And we save money. Whether it's with Dak, whether it's with Zeke, whether it's with Amari, it's not saving Jerry and I a dollar. It's just money that's going to go to another player.
Fair, reasonable, go to the players, well compensated, prepared. The Texas twang. We're all just family here. We all want to make this thing work. We're prepared. We've made generous, reasonable, fair. See all the wording? It's really smart. This is for owners, Jerry and Steven, that know what they're doing. Zeke's not talking. It's down in Mexico. I will not play. This is not the way. I told you in January. Week one, Zeke's not on the field. They're not going to be booing Jerry. They're going to be booing Zeke. This is, you know, have you heard of the art of the deal? This is the art of public relations. This is why people hire PR people to massage, you know, how would this play? Massage the message. Make it. This is a prime example. Listen to the wording by Jerry and Steven and the Cowboys. They've been through this 20 times. This is the first rodeo for Zeke. He never held out before. And he's stumbling. And he's not doing a good job on this. All the messaging, Cowboys' favor. Speaking of messaging, I have never seen a team coming off a 7-8-1 season. The Cleveland Browns make this much noise, but they give us a story every day. So yesterday, they can't even not re-sign an offensive line coach without making it a big story. So Bob Wiley was that sort of verbose, outspoken, funny character offensive line coach. Freddie Kitchens got the job and did not retain him. And Bob Wiley came out and took shots at the rookie head coach, Freddie Kitchens, and said he didn't deserve it. He didn't do squat. So Freddie Kitchens, I don't know why he felt a need to respond. Some have questioned whether he's ready for a big job. I would not have gone here, but Freddie Kitchens fired back at Bob Wiley.
Listen, Bob wasn't under contract. All right, he forgot to tell everybody that. He wasn't under contract. He had talked about retiring forever, all right? So sometimes when a person says something, they have to be made to feel relevant, okay? Bob knows what happened. Bob knows what was going on. And when he was here, he knew everything about it. Bob doesn't wear brown and orange anymore, all right? I had the opportunity to hire Bob. I didn't want to.
Not sure why you had to tell us the backstory. I don't think anybody cares. He's an offensive line coach. But, folks, this is very predictable. This is very predictable. Cleveland's new money, and they don't know what to do with it. They're buying jet skis. They're buying sports cars. They're buying second and third houses. They don't know how to act. How would they? They have never been here before. Super Bowl talk. Cleveland is generational wealth. The grandpa was wealthy. The parents are wealthy. The kids are wealthy. They've been here before. They were noisy last year. They got it out of the building. They're like, there's too much noise here. Because when you've never had money and power, you become fake rich guy and fake tough guy. Loud guy. Because you don't know how to act. Cleveland doesn't know how to act. How would they? They've never been here. They haven't won the division since the 80s. Maybe 1989, but it's still the 80s. The Steelers know how to act. They got noisy, got him out of the building. Pete Carroll's team got noisy, he got him out of the building. And this is, New England gets noisy, they get him out of the building. That's because Pete Carroll and Bill Belichick and Mike Tomlin have been here before. They've been to Super Bowls. This is new money and old wealth. That's what this battle is. The Pittsburgh Steelers have had the quietest Steeler camp in years. And the Cleveland Browns have had the noisiest camp in the entire league. I don't remember a camp this noisy. And again, when you never had money and get it, when you never had power and you get it, you become kind of fake tough guy. Carolina was this for a year. Jacksonville was this 2 years ago. You know, Carolina and Jacksonville, Cincinnati 4 years ago, hosted a playoff game. And everybody's like, oh, Carolina, Jacksonville, Cincinnati. And they followed it up by embarrassing themselves the following year. Because the minute they got into crisis, they're just fake tough guy. Carolina was fake tough guy. Jacksonville was fake tough guy. Cincinnati was fake tough guy. Pittsburgh's tough guy. Pittsburgh's not faking anything. New England's tough guy. Philadelphia's tough guy. Andy Reid, Bill Belichick, Pete Carroll. It's not any fake there. They're proven. And when you get that power and you've never had it, and you get that money and you've never had it, man, you start feeling yourself. Listen to Freddie Kitchens, who by all accounts is a nice guy. I watched him play college football, quarterback at Alabama. But did you hear how he wrapped up the presser yesterday?
You know, the days of inside information and the days of unnamed sources and stuff like that have ended. So you're not going to get any information like that ever. Anybody. And if I ever see it, they're fired immediately. That's the way we're running this organization. And I can take it. John Dorsey can take it. We won't crack, I promise you.
Promises, I'll fire people. Does that need to be said? Does Andy Reid say that? Does Belichick say that? Does Pete Carroll say that? Does Mike Tomlin say that? Does Sean Payton say that? You have to say that stuff. Again, I don't blame Cleveland. act like you've been there before. They haven't. They've never had power. They've never had hype. They've never had money. They've never had it. Pittsburgh across the street's had all of those for years. They're trying to get quieter. Cleveland's trying to validate their success. We'll fire people. Let me tell you the story. Here's a headline. Let's chug beer. I don't blame them. When you've never been there, you're kind of faking it. Cleveland, 7-8-1. 1-5 against winning teams. Making headlines again.
Be sure to catch live editions of The Herd weekdays at noon Eastern, 9 a.m. Pacific.
We've had Jane Slater on, reporter NFL Network, based out of Dallas, Texas. She's been at Oxnard at the Cowboys camp for the last couple of weeks. She's been a great guest on our show. We thought we'd bring her on today because the Zeke and Jerry and Stephen Jones negotiations through Jane yesterday were very, very public, and Jane is now joining us on the phone. Generally speaking, Jane, I wouldn't love my team negotiating through the media. Aaron Donald and the Rams, Stan Kroenke, it was very quiet. Carson Wentz with Philadelphia, it lasted maybe 6 hours and it was no longer a story. This thing's gone on now for 2-3 weeks. It's very public. What do you make of that?
I don't make too much of it, Colin, because it's Dallas and we're used to it when you cover this team. But here's what I will say about the situation. I think what the Cowboys are saying to you is, look, we feel as though we have put what they described as generous offers on the table for all three of them, Dak, Amari, and Zeke. They feel good about them. But as we've discussed throughout camp, it takes two to tango. And it doesn't sound like, at least from the Cowboys side, that they have had a willing dance partner in some of this. In other words, where they're at and where all three of these players are at are nowhere close to where they want to be. I've been told that they have made offers when they characterize it as generous that puts each one of these players in the top five at their positions in terms of highest paid. So they feel good about that. And, you know, we talked about this last week, this Zeke thing. It's my understanding what they're asking is close to Todd Gurley numbers. The Cowboys feel like that's a bad deal. They don't want to get in the business of starting with Todd Gurley numbers. They feel the Le'Veon Bell numbers are more appropriate, and that's been the rub here. But it was also described to me that if they can't get on board with something ahead of the season, the Cowboys aren't necessarily opposed to doing one-year prove-it deals.
Yeah, their schedules favorable in the first 3 weeks. Dallas could get off to 3-0 start. They face kind of rebuilding teams. I think Washington, New York Giants are up in there. You know, Zeke almost sounded like yesterday, the story that Zeke's camp appeared to leak to ESPN almost sounded like a threat. We told you in January, we're not going to play without a deal. It came off as a threat to me. How does it come off to you?
I think it's also their way of posturing in this situation. If the Cowboys aren't going to budge and they are sticking with the number and we're not going to get the deal we want done, then here's where we're at. I would say, again, this goes back to it's easy to hear some of the stuff play out in the media and everybody to sort of panic. I think the reason why some of us that cover this team so regularly have not gone into sort of move the meter mode is because we saw this play out with DeMarcus Lawrence. Now, also keep in mind, they went out and got Robert Quinn. So, sort of like with this Alfred Morris deal, they went and insured themselves, but the deal still got done. Now, here was the difference. My understanding is, unlike what happened with David Cantor, who was DeMarcus Lawrence's agent, and this situation, David Cantor picked up the phone. He called Stephen Jones and said, hey, why don't you and DeMarcus Lawrence talk, air out your grievances. They had what was described as a come-to-Jesus meeting, and then everybody was able to get this deal done. It allowed DeMarcus Lawrence to go and get his shoulder surgery. He's starting camp on the PUP list, and he's going to be ready to play by the start of the season, and he got the deal he was looking for. So I don't feel like it's gotten to the point where both sides are to the point where they are literally walking from this table. It's going to be this massive Zeke holdout. I still haven't gotten that sense, Colin. And, you know, but I'll preface that by saying, look, I started from the beginning on this one saying that everyone expected Zeke at camp and he's not here. So I could 1,000% be wrong on this thing, but I will tell you the tone and the feeling here at camp is not one that feels like they can't get something done before the start of the season. I don't expect him here today by this August 6th accrue, that year of free agency that you need in order to be an unrestricted free agent. I get the sense that he's going to be a little bit closer to the start of the season. That's when we'll start seeing some real movement. The Cowboys, of course, break camp here in about a week and a half, go back to Dallas. I think we might see a little bit more movement then, but I think right now the two parties are still pretty far apart, as we talked about last week.
All right, Jane Slater, follower at Slater NFL, NFL Network Inside. The training camp is concluding here Wednesday at 10 a.m. Eastern. Jane, we appreciate you stopping by again. Thank you so much.
Always appreciate having me on. I appreciate it, Colin.
Want more Herd? The Herd streams 24 hours a day, 7 days a week within the iHeartRadio app. Search Herd to listen live or on demand whenever you'd like.
HBO tonight. John Gruden and the Raiders are going to be on Hard Knocks, and it was kind of the first football show we had that was really, really behind the scenes. For years and years, we watch NFL films and stuff, but Hard Knocks, you go into a camp, and they wire everybody up, and there's cameras everywhere. Derek Carr was talking about it. There's a very funny line in this. Here's the sound of Derek Carr saying, "It's not going to be a distraction. Listen carefully."
What I think it does, it opens up the world to show us who we really are, you know? And I think that's a good thing. I've really enjoyed them, honestly. It's been cool. It's not really a distraction, to be honest. There's so many cameras around all the time. Even in meetings, Coach is always filming his presentations, so we're kind of used to it.
Coach is always filming his presentations in meetings. Well, that's what TV stars do. That's always been my concern with John Gruden. He's a TV star. Here's the best way to explain it. A lot of people make money in America, but some of the money is hard money. Lawyers put in brutal hours. Doctors. I know a doctor. He does very well. He's always on call. He gets every other weekend off. Doctors, medicine, lawyers, that is hard money. It's good money. It's hard money. Television is the easiest money. It's just a river that flows into your bank account. You've got makeup people and hair people and multiple producers. Even on this little show, we've got like 6, 8, 10, 12 people helping us. TV's easy money, and you get addicted to it, and it just keeps flowing into your bank account. And like Magic Johnson with the Lakers, John Gruden has a brand to protect that continues to pay him for being a TV star. Gruden was ESPN's highest paid employee. I thought he deserved it. I thought he was a rock star. He was the lead analyst on Monday Night Football, and he was very, very aware of his brand. I'll leave it at that. Like Magic Johnson, and that can get you in trouble. What did we say about Magic? He's not totally all in on job number one. Do you really want to hear that your head coach in the NFL is taping all the presentations? Really? What for? Why? Andy Reid's are probably even better. He doesn't tape them. Sean Payton could tape and sell his. He doesn't tape them. Why is Gruden taping his? Why are the cameras there? Because he's a brand. Rex Ryan talked a lot. He felt he was a brand. I don't want my coach to be a brand. I want my coach to be a coach. Sean McVay doesn't tape his presentations. Kyle Shanahan doesn't tape his. Listen, HBO didn't want the Raiders. They didn't want Derek Carr. They wanted John Gruden. The Raiders have the second losingest win percentage in the league in the last 15 years to Cleveland. The Raiders don't sell anymore, despite what the Oakland crowd will tell you. They don't sell anymore. And Derek Carr's a nice kid. I like him more than most, but he doesn't move the needle. HBO is paying John Gruden. That's why you got it, because your coach is a rock star. And I just don't love my coach being a rock star. I think John Gruden is great for business. I don't think he's great for the standings. I want a coach that's great for the standings. I don't give a rip about my coach being good for season tickets. And I think John is great for business. I mean, he's made the Raiders relevant. Who would deny that? I mean, they got a new stadium coming up, and they're making deals with venture capitalists for parking thing, and they're on HBO, and they're in the news, and they lead our show. That's great for business. Generally, great for business is not great for standings. So, Derek Carr.
Yeah,
I mean, he's taping all his presentations. Cameras are in the film room. Come on. But, I mean, again, HBO picked the right guy. Gruden's fantastic. I mean, watch a little trailer. He's great at this stuff.
I'm really not into dreams anymore, okay? I'm into nightmares. You guys with me on that? Yeah. You got to end somebody's dream. You got to take their job. You got to take their heart. We're not trying to go to the Peach Bowl. We're not trying to go to the Gator Bowl or the Blue Bonnet Bowl. We're trying to go to the Super Bowl, okay? And to do that, you got to really try to end somebody's dream.
There is no Blue Bonnet Bowl. It was last played in 1987. There is no Blue Bonnet Bowl. But again, you just say stuff on TV, and TV, like, validates people. For years and years, I've done radio and TV, and I always say radio separates. Television, it's just playtime. Television's fun. Television's easy. Television's makeup. Television's production. Television, a lot of help. TV is it validates people. Oh, you're on TV? You're a star. You're smart. You're on TV. I always say radio's way harder. Radio's like ditch digging. Television's no makeup people. You have smaller staffs. So Gruden just says Blue Bonnet Bowl and Peach Bowl and Gator Bowl, and everybody's like, yeah. I haven't played the Blue Bonnet Bowl since 1987, so it's a... Oh, boy. It'll be fun, though, right? You'll watch. I'll watch.
Everyone's going to watch. Yeah, did you see that clip? You couldn't write that. It's just natural.
Just he's very verbal.
It's going to be so good. I'm very excited.
What's up, everybody? John Middlecoff. That's me. Three and Out Podcast. That's where I give my football takes. Colin Cowherd's Podcast Network. I used to work in the NFL. I now just spit my opinions. Tom Brady, can he play till 50? Bruce Arians, can he really save Jameis Winston? Why do players, once they hold out, end up coming back without a raise? I don't get it. Again, John Middlecoff, Three and Out Podcast. Go subscribe.
This is a funny story. So Tom Brady put his Boston mansion on the market, meaning he put it up for sale. He has since taken it off the market. So I'll get to that in a second, why he did that. And it's very interesting. He lives in the Brookline section of Boston. I've always thought it's interesting. Troy Aikman felt, Joy Taylor, like a Dallas Cowboy. He felt like Dallas.
Right.
He sounded like Dallas. He looked like Dallas. He talked like Dallas. He played like Dallas. Joe Namath felt like New York City. The mink coats, the hair, the looks. Big Ben feels like Pittsburgh. Okay, I never thought Brady felt like Boston. Boston's cranky and parochial and provincial and political and pessimistic and cold. And they talk Sox and Sam Adams. And Brady's happy and aspirational and global and optimistic and not overly political in terms of career. I always feel like Tom doesn't feel like Boston, not to mention his wife is a supermodel, a Brazilian supermodel. And if you say cold, cranky, political, Sox, Sam Adam, that doesn't sound like you're retiring in Boston. I never feel like they're a Boston couple. They just happen to, like a lot of Americans, they just happen to work in Boston, and this is where they'll stay. They put their house up. They were looking for something in Alpine, New Jersey, which is a rich person area, and Greenwich, Connecticut, which is an even richer person area. They have now since taken it off the market. You know, it's funny about this. And, you can make jokes about Boston, but I've never felt Tom's personality, and maybe it's a California thing. I don't think Aaron Rodgers... He doesn't really feel like Green Bay.
And no.
He doesn't. And I don't think necessarily Russell Wilson feels like Seattle. He feels like almost New York or L.A. Ciara impacts that. So there are certain guys. Eli Manning, to me, doesn't feel like New York. He just works in New York. But it's interesting with Brady. He put his house on the market. So Tom's made $200 million, smart with his money, homes everywhere. His wife's made $500 million. It's not a money thing. They didn't need to put their house on the market for money. Not to mention, LeBron's still trying to sell his place in Akron. I think Tom Brady's place would be on the market at $40 million in Brookline for a while. That's a hard house to sell anywhere. Boston can be kind of geographically isolated. Not saying there's not money and smart people and a lot of income, but that's a big house in a area, cold area. So, but the reason Tom Brady put his house on the market is... Because in this instance, this shows you the competitive nature of him. Okay, this shows you, Brady, don't mess with me. You mess with me, I'll put my house on the market, make sure the media hears, and then the Patriots pay him, and he takes his house off the market. I said Tom's not political. That's very savvy and very political and very shrewd. Tom is letting you know, I may take a discount, but you're not going to run me out of town here. I am ready to move. I'm going to be financially nimble. He didn't have to sell that house. That was imaging. He didn't really want to sell that house. How do I know? Because once I gave him a contract, he took the house off the market. That was, look, I'll take a little less, but don't think I don't have leverage. Don't think I'm crying over here. Don't think I'm in the corner of my house huddled, feeling weakened. No, I'll put my house up in the market. I'll go free agent next year. I'll just leave. You can't franchise tag me. They didn't give me that in the contract. You can't franchise tag. This is where Tom is telling all of us. This ain't over. This is not nearly as close to over as you think. I'm still competitive. I still want leverage. I'm still fighting for my money. I'll sell my home. I'll stay nimble. That's what that told you, what Brady did. Listen, if Brady was a year from retirement, you just sit there in the house. You just keep the damn thing. It's $40 million. It's cold in the winter. You just keep it. He put it on the market, then took it off to tell you, I'm not going to be used. I'm not an old man. I'm still viable. I'll move tomorrow. Don't put baby in a corner. It's not going to work that way with me. I'll give you a little bit of a deal on the contract, but I'm still the most competitive guy on this franchise. And that's where Tom was sending a message. And that's okay. It's not a bad message. But it's a message.
How's that work when you get to go walk around and take a showing of Tom Brady's house? Do you have to get vetted first?
Do you know, we found Tom's neighbors. Maybe one of the reasons he wants to leave is we found his neighbors. We have a tape of Tom's neighbors.
Oh.
They're very Boston.
We're driving on McGrath Highway in Somerville, and I noticed a couple cars swinging, like moving to the right, and we seen something in the street. And he's like, Louie, what is that? What is it? I'm like, I don't know. What is it? So I ran across the highway to grab it. We brought it in the car. We had no idea what it was. First thing I said, this belongs to the Red Sox. This is for Fenway Park.
Yeah.
I'm thinking that they hang it off the Green Monster.
Right.
We need to negotiate here. We're looking for, like, you know.
We're working, too.
Yeah.
I mean, my man had to run across three lanes of traffic.
Those are Tom's neighbors.
Just legendary. Well, you know, at least they're thoughtful.
Very thoughtful neighbors.
Yeah, they're going to make sure the house is cool while you're out of town.
They love the Sox. They love the Sox. So Brady just sending a little messaging out there. I may be 42. I'm not an old man. I'm not cowering in the corner. I'll put this puppy up for sale. I'll buy a house in New Jersey. By the way, Belichick hates the Jets and Giants and all that stuff, right? I'll move over to New Jersey. Don't kid yourself. I can move. A little messaging by Tommy.
Be sure to catch live editions of The Herd weekdays at noon Eastern, 9 a.m. Pacific on Fox Sports Radio, FS1, and the iHeartRadio app.
I saw this. This got voted on. The All-Decade Team. NBA.com came out with this. The All-Decade Team. The best NBA players of the 2010 decade, right? 2010 to 2020. So the first team I totally agree with. 10 rings over a 10-year span. Curry, James Harden, LeBron, Kevin Durant, Kawhi Leonard. That is a great team. I agree across the board. Steph Curry, James Harden, LeBron, Durant, Kawhi Leonard. It's basically LeBron James and people who could beat LeBron James and James Harden. The second team, good hell, this is my personal nightmare. Chris Paul, Westbrook, Blake Griffin, Carmelo Anthony, and Anthony Davis. No rings. Hard to play with outside of Anthony Davis. The first team is winners. The second team is really good on Instagram. They're only missing John Wall. The drop-off first to second team. This shows you, and they say this in every business, that it doesn't matter what the business is. In every business, you've heard this before, Joy, you know, 10% of the people, you know, are influencing 90% of the outcomes.
Right.
Real estate, medicine, there's a top 10%. Look at the first team, all-decade team. Curry, LeBron, Durant, Kawhi, Harden, and look at the second team. Look at the drop-off. It's highlight guy. It's Instagram guy. It's hard to coach guy. It's sometimes lack self-awareness guy. Now, Anthony Davis is the one guy in the second team I like, and James Harden is the one guy on the first team, though he deserves it, that can drive me nuts. Harden, I think, does deserve first team. Anthony Davis, I do believe, deserves second team. But the drop-off there, even in the NBA, the drop-off from the top group to the second group. Now, the third group was even goofier, but that's because it was D-Wade and Kobe, and they got old in the decade.
That was the most debated.
Yeah, and this is, don't take much out of this. Giannis is just a baby. Kobe and Dwayne Wade got very old in the decade. LaMarcus Aldridge, I wouldn't put him there, but whatevs. That team's just a mishmash of stuff that I wouldn't get too caught up on that. Again, if you'd have gone the previous decade, not 2010 and on, Kobe's probably in that one. So don't that's not a shot at Kobe. It's just the way the 10 years worked out. They didn't align perfectly with D-Wade and Kobe's peak years. But the first team, amazing. Second team, you need like four basketballs to get it up the floor.
Be sure to catch live editions of The Herd weekdays at noon Eastern, 9 a.m. Pacific.
Yesterday we did the AFC. Today we do the NFC. I believe with all teams, I started doing this with the NBA about 10 years ago, you can really describe very succinctly, very quickly, with three words, which forces you to get right to the point on your teams. The direction, who's important, what matters. We call it the three-word game. Today we start with the NFC. Here we go. Dallas Cowboys, America's noisiest team. Listen, Jerry Jones is the most public owner in American sports. Mark Cuban's probably second. I couldn't tell you who's third. I would prefer my owner be Stan Kroenke. Owns four teams. You never see him. But as long as Jerry runs it, they're public. My problem is this offseason, this is a very good young team with many special players. I don't think we need an update on Zeke, Dak, and Amari's contracts on a regular basis. But they've gone public for years. This is the most public they've been. I don't love it. Eagles. Wentz and for all. By the way, that's only three words because we use the symbol for and. Listen, they gave Carson Wentz the big contract. They shipped Nick Foles out. They've told you the direction. He's our guy. Am I concerned about the injuries? Absolutely. Do I think he's an elite talent? Oh, yes. I think he's in the Andrew Luck class, even the Patrick Mahomes class. I love their offensive line play. I love their defensive line play. There's so much about this organization I like. I would say if Wentz is healthy, and I knew that, Super Bowl favorites. That's how strongly I feel about Philadelphia. Offense, defense, coaching, GM. But it all comes down to Carson Wentz and his health. Giants, QB versus newbie. Eli and Daniel Jones, this is the storyline. They just had cluster injuries at wide receiver, putting more pressure on Eli Manning. They have upgraded their O-line. Evan Ingram's a terrific young tight end. Saquon Barkley is a home run hitter at running back. But in this league, you can have all of those components. Is your quarterback capable of carrying you when your defense doesn't show up? And the Giants' defense has a whole bunch of holes. Olivier Vernon, gone. Landon Collins, gone. It's quarterback, QB versus the newbie, Daniel Jones. Redskins, Haskins for trouble. I think Dwayne Haskins is going to be arguably the best quarterback out of this class. But it's a dysfunctional organization. They've been hit and miss on drafting. They generally overpay for free agents. Trent Williams is their best offensive lineman, and he wants out. I think if you have to play Dwayne Haskins early, he is the type of college quarterback that needs a year. Some guys don't. Some guys have the perfect college coach, moves him right into the NFL. I think he needs a year, and it could get ugly. Tampa Bay, Winston or Luston? This is the last year for Jameis. I know that was awful. I think Bruce Arians and those weapons guarantee that Jameis is productive. Can he be a grown-up? Can he stay out of the headlines? Can he be an alpha yet lead men and not get in trouble? Do or die year for Jameis Winston. Falcons, Quinn better win. Dan Quinn's a good coach. Good coaches get fired when they don't win. Matt Ryan is now moving out of his peak years. They have very good personnel. They have drafted very well. Strong owner, strong GM, strong quarterback. What's that mean? Pressure now on Dan Quinn, the coach. Carolina Panthers, never Cam Tell. Roller coaster Cam. They could be great, or they could be 7-9. Shoulder surgery, we'll have to wait. Christian McCaffrey, for the record, has been a great addition. Wide receivers, they're average. They're good to better than good everywhere else, but I never can get a read on them. Saints, get over it. Listen, it was a bad call. You got to get over it. You still have a good O-line to great. Quarterbacks aging. Lost Mark Ingram. You got to get over it. This division's way too good. The NFC is way too good for you to hold a grudge against the NFL. Let's go to the 49ers in the NFC West. Give me more Jimmy. Real simple. The roster's better. They've got the coach. They've upgraded O-line. I don't love their corners defensively, but they have the pieces now. They can win this division. Not saying they will, but I want to see Jimmy Garoppolo. 8 starts, 6-2. I need to see more, but I'm very hopeful. Arizona, Murray up offense. Reports are Kyler Murray's amazing. Kind of shocked, to be honest. But then maybe it's Oklahoma head coach Lincoln Riley. Baker and Kyler Murray walk into the league. They're ready to go. I think it's a fascinating story. I don't know how it's going to turn out. Joy and I say this. It's the great mystery of the NFL, and I can't wait. Rams. No hangover here. Folks, they're good. All right, they got to the Super Bowl. They've drafted well last couple of years. They have all the components. Owner, GM, coach, quarterback. Jared Goff, according to players, was voted top 10 in the NFL. No reason to step back. Aaron Donald still in his prime. Cooper Kupp comes back at wide receiver. They're good. Seahawks. Russ got his. I don't know where to go with this. I think Russ deserved every penny. Their offensive line is still meh. Bobby Wagner's great, but they're very young defensively. The division's gotten better. Listen, they had to pay Russ, so they got 4 draft picks, turned them into 11. They're going to rely on some draft picks to really have to hit this year, and they may. Pete's a great developer of young players. They're going to need some of their young guys, like rookies, to pop. Let's go to the NFC North. Bears, Trubisky or Falsbisky? I know that's awful. We used it last year. I just don't know what he is. First year bad, second year better, disappointing now in camp. I don't know what he is. Do you know what he is? I know the defense is great. I know Nagy's good. I like a lot about him. Winnable division. Winnable division. I have no idea what I get with him. I got to watch. I think he has a very low ceiling. Detroit Lions. Matt or doormat? Matt Patricia, Matt Stafford, or are they in fourth again? This division's really, really good. Matt Patricia brought Trey Flowers over from New England. People say he's a genius. I still can't figure out why he has a pencil in his hair with a laminated play sheet. Pencils don't work on laminated play sheets. A lot of people think he's really, really good. We'll have to see. Matt Stafford, I need more big games and big moments against the Packers. Vikings, Kirk better work. I do think Kirk Cousins is going to rebound this year. And I think he's going to have a very nice year because I think he's a very nice quarterback. But in the end, he has not been good on Monday Night Football, Thursday Night Football, big games against rivals. Kirk better work. Mike Zimmer's a good coach. Outside of offensive line, I like their personnel across the board. Really like their receivers. Really like their linebackers. It's time for Kirk Cousins to step up. And finally, the Packers. Le Fleur or Le Ceiling? I think it's going to work. I think Aaron and Matt LaFleur are going to work. I think the organization has drafted defense last 2 years and been smart with their defensive free agent money. I think Devontae Adams is a star and Aaron Jones is good at running back. They develop offensive linemen. I think it's going to work. I like them to win the division. But if it doesn't work, the excuses are over because this is the best defense Aaron's had in at least 5 or 6 years.